every time I decide to do something like, you know, hiring PR, sort of like these little investments in yourself. Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. But when they do work, when you have made that little investment in yourself and you get something out of it, you know, you see the return on your investment. Oh my gosh, it's like no one can replicate that feeling.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Peterson, the editor-in-chief of Business of Home. Welcome to Trade Tales, where I'll be talking to interior designers about the challenges, pivots, and perspective shifts that come with growing a design firm. My hope is that you hear your own why echoed in these stories, or an idea that sparks your own breakthrough. I hope it helps you realize that even when entrepreneurship feels lonely, you're not alone. My guest today is a designer who made a big push a few years back to take her firm to the next level, toward bigger projects, more robust budgets, and new opportunities. The process required not only refining her team, but also learning to trust her own abilities. I can't wait to share it with you. But first, a quick word from our sponsor. This podcast is sponsored by June Lalloy. You likely already know Lalloy, a prominent name in the design world known for rugs. Now, meet its sister brand, June Lalloy, a total home furnishings destination that expands on Lalloy's expertise, adding furniture, lighting, decor, and of course, more rugs. If you know Lalloy, you know their collection leads with quality, craft, and great design. And June Lalloy follows suit. With June Lalloy's trade program, designers receive exclusive pricing, priority customer support, and a seamless online sourcing experience. Visit June Lalloy today to explore the collection and sign up for a trade account. That's JoonLalloy.com.
I come from a building family. My father is a lifelong builder, artist. And I think growing up, I just always felt like there was something in that for me. I had no idea what. And so I eventually went to college and kind of messed around with a couple different degrees before graduating with a very liberal arts program, Chicano Studies and Latin America Studies. I actually thought I was going to be an immigration lawyer and realized that that really just wasn't for me. At that time, I was also working for my dad and his business and doing odd jobs on construction sites. Like I spent an entire summer caulking before the painters came in to enamel, which was awful in retrospect. But you know, it did give me a really great perspective on being kind of at the bottom of the totem pole.
That's Anne McDonald. After a few years working odd jobs in Minneapolis, she took a new gig that would put her on a path toward a career in design.
I'm in my mid-20s. I'm finally kind of like, I gotta do something. And I had been working for a residential colorist. So she was the person you'd call up if you needed to paint some walls of your beautiful historic home or the facade or, you know, the exterior, whatever. She just needed someone to help her out. And I knew her at the time and she asked me to help. And I really, really loved it. Like I really took to it. And she really encouraged me. She was like, you've got this eye. You've kind of had this innate ability with this thing and materials and homes and everything seemed to be sort of converging. I started doing a little bit more for her and dabbling into some selections within the interior world. Around that time, my dad called me up. His interior designer for his firm quit and he was like, what do you think about coming to work full time for me?
Anne spent a decade working for her father, then stepped away from the business to start a family. It didn't take long before she found herself pulled back into design.
I ended up staying at home with my kiddos. They were pretty young at the time. Took a few years off. I was feeling pretty burnt out. And that was amazing to kind of have that reset as well. I didn't have intentions to start my own firm. I just was helping some friends out with some selections for renovations they were doing or whatever. And that sort of snowballed. Like the first project that I finished, sort of start to finish for a friend, was published by a local shelter magazine. It felt totally out of the blue. It felt totally wild. Like I must have hit the pinnacle of my career. This is crazy. And then it was just kind of gangbusters from there.
In 2018, Anne officially launched her firm. I wanted to talk to her about how she's navigating a shift towards smaller projects, how her team is adjusting to a new pace of work, and why bringing on a CFO has helped her look toward the future. You took a pause. You started helping friends with their home. When did you kind of take a step back and say, oh, I just built a business?
It was probably 2020 when I was still working out of my home. I hadn't yet hired anybody. It was just me. I was still kind of refining a lot of my processes and even trying to figure out certain software and, you know, just how to do the organizational side of it. Because obviously, like so many of us, we could do the creative, but coming up with that infrastructure was really hard for me and not intuitive and felt really clunky. And I just kind of wanted someone else to take the reins. But when it's your company, no one's going to step in and save the day. No one's going to take the reins. So I really had to figure that part out. And I felt like for a couple of years there, it was kind of one step forward, two steps back. It just felt clunky. And I think part of it was just like, where is this thing going? And how much do I want to put into this? How much time do I want to take away from my family? And how seriously do I want to take this? How much of a business do I need to create? And am I overanalyzing this? Can I just kind of dumb it down and stay at this kind of mid-level? You know what I mean? Or or do I have to really like level up in order to do the things that I want to do, in order to be the designer that I knew I could be? And I think in 2020, that's when things started to change. I had, you know, had that local shelter magazine publish a project, and there was some sort of recognition. My Instagram, I was really fortunate to kind of take to Instagram early on, and people seemed to resonate with what I was saying. And I really liked communicating that way visually and stuff. So that felt good. Like all of these little things felt like intuitive and they felt like me. And so I, like many of us in COVID, had a couple projects going in, you know, that March of 2020 when the world kind of shut down. At that point, I did have a part-time employee. It was just like all of a sudden the rug was pulled out from all of us, and projects just came to a screeching halt, and no one really knew what was going to happen. Well, within, 6 months, everything went crazy. And I had to lay off my employee when COVID hit. And so all of a sudden it was just me. I was really tentative to take anybody on because, again,
you had just fired somebody.
Right. No one knew what was going to happen. And I certainly wasn't ready for the deluge that was coming. Someone reached out to me on Instagram, actually, and was like, hey, if you need help, I could help you. I have no design experience. You know, she was just out of college, whatever. And I was like, great, that sounds perfect. I just need like someone to help me. So I hired her in a part-time capacity, and then pretty quickly, she went to full-time. Pretty quickly after that, I ended up hiring my sister full-time as operations and logistics, which was one of the best moves I ever made. And then that was the point where I was like, you know, kind of looked up and I was like, all right, so now I'm doing furniture and I'm doing construction and kind of the architectural side of things. And so, man, I'm a full-service interior design firm. Here we are. Like, I guess this is, you know, we landed here.
Did it feel like the pandemic or sort of that influx of projects and the decisions you made in response to them, like made the decision for you about what kind of firm you were going to have then?
I think it did. I thought a lot about that actually, and how lucky the timing.
How did I get here?
Yeah. And how lucky I was to be an aspiring designer during that moment, because I think everyone was busy and everyone was looking for a designer. And man, I mean, if you called yourself a designer, you probably had a lot of work, you know? And I think what happened was because of the nature of COVID and the supply chain issues and the just trying to get tradespeople to show up or the contractors and just the nature of how tricky it got for us, that really allowed the cream to rise to the top. And so I think if you actually survived the pandemic and you came out the other side, like you were a pretty solid design firm, you know?
When were you able to kind of stop, look around and say like, okay, what have we built so far and how do we refine that?
I think it was 2023. It was really like kind of the that straggler year of COVID. It kind of felt like the year that everybody was recouping to some extent. And for me, it was my business had leveled out to some degree. You know, I didn't have the sort of the masses of people inquiring about projects like we did in 2021, 22. There was still some of that in 23, but I think more than anything, it was like me trying to figure out internally, okay, I had taken on that software. I had taken on those employees. I had built this company in this maelstrom. And was it right? Were the employees right? Were the systems right? Were some of these things that we just had to do because like we needed to put one foot in front of the other? Was that like a great long-term choice for us? Or was this the moment for me to really sit and be like, all right, I need to take a beat and I think about these things and I can't just keep on doing it because they're in place. Like I really need to just give this a minute and decide if this is the AMD I want moving forward. And so 2023 was a year of big shifts for us. And there was some shifting of employees. I laid off or I fired somebody that was up until that point, a really close, important part of the firm. That was super hard. It was a really emotional moment.
Can I ask, what was it that made you realize this person and the firm are no longer moving in the same direction?
Well, I think it was a leveling up. I think it was a moment where I was like, I need people that can really push me, that I can really learn from, and who have a lot of experience, who have design degrees, who have tons of drafting. I mean, it's just sort of the, you know, basic qualifications. But until that moment, for me, a lot of the people that worked for me didn't necessarily have that. They were great and they were agile and they could like meet me in the moment that I had been in. But from that point forward, it was a very clear move toward like, all right, we're going in a different direction now. I want this to be buttoned up and professional, and I want my team to be that as well.
What else had to change in that moment to kind of get you where you wanted to go?
It's funny because I think about the design aspect of it is so secondary in so much of this conversation.
Totally. You know, like,
so yes, that was part of it. Like the scopes and the budgets of the projects were leveling up. We were getting bigger scopes, bigger budgets, which ultimately this all comes down to that. You know, that's all I want. But in the background was this desire to, you know, how do we get bigger scopes and budgets? Like how can we keep leveling up in that way? How do I get my name out there in demographics that may not know it at this point? So we took a real turn into like PR. It was fall of 2024 that I hired PR for the first time. But earlier in 2024, I had also decided to do the House Beautiful Show House. It was some of these choices, like branching out from kind of this tunnel vision that I had had up until that point of just client work, right? Like what else can I be doing? Are there partnerships? Do I want to be like a designer that does a CB2 collab someday? And if so, like, how do I get myself on that path? So some of those things, especially from a PR perspective, were very conscious choices. You know, in early 23, we moved to a proper studio space. It was the first time I had worked outside of my actual home. And that was amazing to be able to, you know, have client meetings here, have our team meet here, and really be able to separate, again, like leveling up, right? As soon as I have an address that's like just for AMD, it just feels different.
I want to go back to the PR piece for a moment, because I think so many people are wrestling with what you need that for, how that aligns with your goals. Can you talk a little bit about your thought process going into it? What made you kind of jump in and say, yes, let's do it? And what it's felt like in the last year?
PR does feel slippery.
I love that.
And I don't mean like sleazy. I just mean like, I think it's a hard thing to quantify sometimes. Or designers, especially like PR people love to quantify it, but designers are sort of like, well, did I get that on my own? Or like, did you actually pull that in for me? You know, there's this moment of like reckoning that sort of happens, I think. And PR is expensive. And so it feels like a real luxury to be in the moment where you can actually splurge on PR. The reason that I initially decided to go for it, like spring of 2024, I found out, I got an email that told me that I was going to be on the roster for Architectural Digest New American Voices the following fall when they announced it. That came out of, I just came out of nowhere. I felt like someone had just handed me the golden ticket, and I wanted to really lean into that. We also had some projects wrapping, big, you know, larger kind of whole house projects that we were shooting. And I knew those were going to be up for, you know, pitching to certain publications and whatnot. And so the convergence of these things made it feel like, all right, maybe now is the time for PR. We were also incredibly busy. Amanda on my team, who's my sister, and she does operations logistics, she was handling a lot of our PR at that time. And it just got to the point where it was like, she's too busy to do it. I feel like we're in over our head. We need professionals, because it's just, you know, it's like offloading a major piece of the puzzle, and it's keeping your firm relevant. It's like keeping you out there, keeping you fresh. That said, I do want to say, like, we scaled back for summer to keep up with the machine. Feels insane sometimes. I mean, I know even on Instagram, right? Like feeding the beast, and it just makes me feel like a shell of myself at times. It makes me feel inauthentic. Like, I know that I need to step away from Instagram or step away a little bit from PR if I'm feeling like spread too thin in that way, or like I'm just kind of talking for the sake of talking. Like, I don't want to just be a talking head. I want to say things that feel really true and authentic and right to my brand and write to maybe the people that are going to hear it. I don't need to be focusing on Instagram all the time. Like, I'd rather just go swimming with my kids or whatever, you know, like be a mom, like do these other things, wear all these other hats that I have, which is reality for all of us. So it allowed me to do that, allowed me to, like, for my brain to just sort of settle into who I am and listen to my gut. And then I would always come back in the fall feeling reset, like kind of excited to get back on the gram, excited to post up and excited to, like, engage with my followers again and not feel just like I was slogging through.
Can you talk a little bit about how you've captured your work? Because I think that's a really powerful through line here. It's sort of the mood, the sensibility in how you see and capture your work.
I'm really grateful to some friends I had early on starting off. Like, I had people say to me, and of course I listened to all the podcasts, and I'm not just saying that, like, I did. And that's what's so cool about podcasts for aspiring designers. I mean, it's like going to school, you know, you get to listen to these people talk about these things, and you're like, I mean, the number of ahas I had listening to podcasts, especially early on, and still do for sure. It's just such a, it helped me so much. And, you know, a couple times I heard people say, designers I really looked up to, talk about the importance of photography. And if you can spend money on something early on, spend money on a great photographer, because it's just gonna, it's worth its weight in gold. And it totally was. I mean, the first project that I hired, like, what I considered sort of a real interior photographer, like someone who I felt totally intimidated by, and I was, you know, thrilled that they even said yes. And they shot one of my projects, and Elle Decor picked it up for an online article. And that was, again, I felt like the golden ticket had fallen from the sky in that moment too. And that was 2022, I believe. So the through line being great photographers, it's so critical. If you do anything, if you spend money on anything, I think that needs to be the first, because in that way, you're going to get something that really levels up aesthetically. And with what we do, like, so much of what we have is just visual, really. It just boils down to that. And not only that, like a 2D visual, but like a feeling. And that's really what I've always tried to conjure, was this emotion or this feeling through the image. And so hiring photographers that capture that, to me, has been important. Now, a lot of designers end up going with one photographer, some do, one or two. I've kind of dabbled quite a bit in different photographers. I have been trying to kind of, like, find the right person for the right projects. And I'm really glad I have, but I'm kind of in the moment now where I'm like, all right, I think I'm gonna hunker down. I've kind of chosen this one person, and I'm and really kind of get on a roll with this person.
Do you work with a stylist in your shoots?
Yes, I didn't at first. And man, styling is something that I hate with a burning passion. I hate it.
In general, as a finishing layer of a project or just for the shoot?
No, but that's the thing. Like when I'm styling a home at the end of an install, I am in a completely different headspace than when we're shooting with camera, right? Like there are very different
things. Yeah.
Different things. Yeah. Styling for a shoot is just, it's a different beast altogether. And I learned that quickly the hard way with a few of my early shoots. I was just like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. I was trying to be the stylist, and I just couldn't. It was so incredibly stressful for me. And so, you know, I don't know, a few years ago, I mean, where I decided, 22, 23 is when I brought in a stylist for the first time. And that was amazing. I was like, this is also, you know, totally worth its weight in gold. Like, I don't know if I'll ever go back. They have an eye, they have an ability to see through a lens. And I just don't, I know what I like, you know? When I'm working with a stylist and a photographer, I like them to direct the ship, but I'm going to weigh in a little bit on some things here and there. But otherwise, I'm pretty hands off. I'm like, you guys do you. You're the professionals. Like, run with it.
Does that moment when all of this gets published feel like it will be momentous or a game changer for the firm? Like, are you sitting on stuff that sort of shows the next level of clients what's possible?
Gosh, that's an interesting question because, like, yes. I'm really excited for all three of them. I think they're all really different. The funny thing though about, and designers know this, like one of these projects, well, two of them really started in COVID. Like we're still dealing with COVID as designers, you know?
Like I feel like COVID, so many COVID projects are just starting. We're just starting to see them now.
Yeah, totally. So as designers, you're like, you know, this is not new news either. Like these are projects that I designed a long time ago. It feels like forever ago that I designed them. So in my head, I'm like, I'm really excited to, for sure, I'm thrilled to be shooting them and to put them out in the world. And in the same breath, I'm kind of ready to move on from them. You know, like I
here's this great idea I had in 2021. Yeah,
exactly. Yes. And so, and the funny thing is, and I do feel like there's firms out there that are experiencing this as well. 2024 and so far 2025 have been very squishy. I had, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 projects, which is a lot. I mean, literally like half of our load in the last year and a half or so, either delay or just kind of kaput altogether or change trajectories because of nothing that we were doing, just
right.
Life like for
the
them.
Was and it mostly the economy, yeah. Uncertainty?
Yes. Yeah, uncertainty. Yeah, for sure. All of it. And so that part's been really weird because it's like usually, you know, we kind of have this rhythm of presenting about one project a month, which means ultimately we might be shooting, you know, ideally like 3 to 4 projects a year. But it feels very off from that right now. We are not presenting once a month. And so ultimately we're not shooting as much either. So, you know, our next batch of shoots after this summer, after this 3 that we do, I'm not sure when it's going to be, but I can tell you that there's some stuff we're working on now that I'm designing now. And if it actually comes to fruition and happens, I mean, that I'm so excited about, you know, but that's the hope. Like as a designer, as a creative, like I hope, I mean, in a perfect world, any project that I just finish, I hope it's my favorite project I've ever worked on. You know, like I always want to feel that way after I finish something, no matter what it is. So yes, I mean, the 3 projects, I am so excited because at one time I finished those and I was like, this is the best work I've ever done, you know? And I'm so excited about these 3. And I'm so excited about the stuff I'm working on now.
We're taking a quick break to talk more about June Lalloy. As a sister brand to Lalloy, June Lalloy maintains the same design acumen, high standards of quality and value, offering furniture, rugs, lighting, and decor for today's home. The June Lalloy Trade Program is designed to make doing business a breeze, offering exclusive benefits to designers that include special pricing, priority customer support, and a seamless sourcing experience. Visit JuneLeLoy.com today to explore the collection and sign up for a trade account. That's JoneLeLoy.com. How do you decide what to say yes to so that you can make sure you always feel like you've just done the best work?
I think we've gotten really good at honing in on our sort of ideal client and making sure that there is a great relationship between us, you know, AMD, and between our client, because it is so much a relationship. It's not transactional. It can't be. I'm like too much of like a heart-to-heart person.
Yeah.
For it to be transactional. And ultimately, like, I want my work to infuse that sentiment. So having a person who I trust, who I know isn't going to like turn on me and all of a sudden, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Maybe they don't pay me. Maybe there's, you know, lawyers. I mean, we all have been there, and I've learned from those lessons how to see the red flags early on. And so now we're at this point where by the time I have a one-on-one with a potential client, they've passed a lot of a smell test through Amanda, who does all of our sort of, you know, intake forms and intake calls and that sort of thing. And by the time I get to them, it's just a joy. It's like I get to meet these people and just have a fun conversation with them about something really exciting for their home or potential home. And I just get to decide, like, you know, is this a project that we have capacity for, that I have sort of internal capacity for? Is it the right fit that way? Because by the time they meet me, it's like all the other boxes have been checked.
That feels like a huge gift. Who is that ideal client for you right now?
Oh gosh. I mean, well, to be honest, right now we're taking, from a scope perspective, we're taking smaller clients than we would have taken a year and a half ago because we're just there because of the economy and the squishiness. And I'm not mad about that. Like, I could design kitchen and baths all day, every day. I do love it. It's like my roots, you know? So we're taking smaller projects, but regardless of budget or scope, that person still needs to be someone we really trust, and vice versa. Like, we need to feel that trust back to us, you know? So yes, it's budget and it's scope, but it's trust. It's like, there's certain things Amanda talks about with like, maybe how laid back or casual they're on phone calls. Often she says our client, our ideal client in a phone call might be a few minutes late to get on the phone call, or they're kind of like a little loosey-goosey. And it's not because we're loosey-goosey. It's because I think what we do is such a luxury. So there's this fine line between people that are taking the whole thing sort of too seriously and almost like clutching their dollars, you know?
Right. And those people show up early for the call.
Yes, exactly. And they're the ones that it's just, they're like qualifying and quantifying everything. And that is how the project is going to go for those people. And that's, again, like it really just all boils down to trust. Do you trust us? Do you trust us to be like a steward of your investments and your money or not? You know,
I wanted to go back to the shift you made in your business a couple of years ago. I think preparing for this, I had asked, you know, what's the most profound business pivot you made that put your firm on a different trajectory? And you had written back that it was learning to take yourself seriously. Can you tell me what that meant to you and sort of what that journey has felt like?
I think because maybe I never thought too much about my future, what I wanted to do. You know, I wasn't a kid that had this like strong, like, okay, this is the path and this is what I'm going to do and this is how to get there. And I had a lot of fun in high school and college, and I didn't necessarily get great grades. And I think there was a certain like dumbing down that I did with my younger self for a long time. Also, as women, I think it's sort of an easy thing to do. It's harder to lean into like, no, I actually got this. And no, I actually feel really confident in this moment. And oh my gosh, this is actually like really intuitive for me or really easy for me. I'm really gonna lean in that direction. I think it's a lot easier for us to default to like, oh no, it's, you know, maybe I need help or maybe this isn't for me, or maybe, you know, kind of the negative aspects of that side of things. And so I look back now and I'm like, there were so many years where I did downplay myself and almost my value. And when I started leaning into this creativity and this art and design, I felt like I could do it. And I think it took a lot. I mean, it took a decade of me listening to my gut in that way. It also took me leaving my dad's business, which was a super hard choice, but I felt like it was the right thing to do. And now I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, it was the best thing I ever did. I'm so grateful to have had that time with my dad at his firm and learned so much from him. But I would have never been able to start AMD had I just kind of like rested in that safe space. I needed to get the guts and to get like the grit and to be like, no, I think I can do this really hard thing. In little ways, it was like the first time I hired that, you know, very professional photographer. Like that was a big thing for me to be like, okay, holy shit, this is me taking myself and what I just put out in the world really seriously. Like this is a serious thing. It's a serious investment. And I'm willing to do it for myself and my business. Like I've never really thought about it that way, but it's those little things. Every time I decide to do something like that, you know, hiring PR, it's sort of like these little investments in yourself. And sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. But when they do work, when you have made that little investment in yourself and you get something out of it, you know, you see the return on your investment. Oh my gosh, it's like no one can replicate that feeling because you've just done that for yourself.
What does your team look like today?
So it's myself and I'm like head creative. I do all of the design still, which is a lot, but I love it. I mean, that's why I'm doing this thing. You know, I do love it. We are looking to hire another designer. So we're kind of in the middle of hopefully bringing someone on for that. I do have another designer that works on the team. She does a lot of the heavy lifting for me, like drafting and project management. And then I have Amanda, who is my operations logistics and just sort of my like, she's like the person who makes everything feel sane for me. You know, it's crazy that she's my sister because we have incredibly different brains. Because we're sisters and family, like everything is so intuitive with us. So she knows like if I'm getting burnt out, you know, she kind of knows the signals and she knows what to say to like kind of help pull me in a different or delegate, help me delegate or whatever it is. So it's been really, really special having her on. And she's been with us for 4 years now.
That's incredible. So right now it's the three of you.
Yes, just the three of us. And then we have like a CFO that consults for us, which has also been talk about like investing in yourself and your company. Like that's been an incredible investment for us. We have our PR, we've got a bookkeeper and a CPA that all work sort of on a consulting basis.
Tell me about your CFO.
So she's incredible. Her name's Brittany. And she, you know, I don't have that ability to like even figure out how to look at my numbers and do like projections and analysis and things like that. So she's been doing a lot of like, where are we making money? Where are we losing money? You know, what are smarter ways for us to be doing this every day? So it's been awesome. Like I'm learning so much and it makes me like sleep easier. Honestly, having her in my back pocket has just made me like I can exhale fully.
Well, I know you said you're doing kind of the prep work now, but have there been sort of revelations that have changed the way you do business already?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And they're kind of like nitty gritty boring stuff about like our software, like how things sort of overlap or inefficiencies with some of those aspects, you know, and there's conversations with her too about like, I think anyone in that position is always going to want to see us making more money, right? Like that's their job. So there's been conversations about like, okay, how can we increase profitability and where does it make most sense for us to do that? And where does it just feel like we're like, it just doesn't make as much sense. So I think right now the bigger conversation is that, and ultimately it's, I don't want to charge any more an hour. And I also don't want to increase our markup. So we have to look in other ways. Like, how else can we, where are alternative revenue streams and how can we access more of those? So we're looking into that. And I've got some exciting things happening in that way too.
Have conversations about money with clients gotten easier?
For sure they have. I think at first it was hard to have those conversations because I felt like everything was such an ask, you know, asking for $5,000 for a sofa felt crazy. Like I was like, they're going to say no. How could I ever ask something like this, let alone, you know, the cost of draperies or whatever it was, or even my design fees. And I think that showed, I think you have, like, I am a salesperson at the end of the day. I'm selling stuff. I'm selling my designs. I'm selling a feeling. I'm literally selling a sofa with a particular fabric. And I have to be convinced of the value or the worth of all of those things, of my worth, of my teams, of what we give the client from a systems and an aesthetic perspective. But I also have to like be really on board for the worth of a sofa or some draperies that I'm selling. And if I'm not, if there's hesitancy at all, the client's going to see that and sense it. So at first, I think it was just lots of those sort of obstacles where it was really hard for me to sort of get over that hump. Now that I'm over it, and now also that we have this like very transparent, you know, very clear verbiage in our contract and kind of our onboarding process with potential clients about how we charge, it's just black and white. It kind of is what it is. And you're either on, you know, on board or not. And if you don't like the way we charge, we've had a couple times where people have tried to negotiate our fees. And that is such a red flag to us. We're like, no, I don't think we're fit. I mean, we just walk away. Or if we have clients who really redline our contracts, like we had that happen one time where this client just, I mean, really.
Here, I wrote you a new contract.
Exactly. And we very politely were like, I don't think we're going to be a good fit together. And they were kind of offended. And, you know, there's not much to say. I'm like, I've been to this rodeo. I'm not making the same mistake twice. So for sure, I think all of that has gotten easier. I just, again, I think it comes with confidence and self-assuredness and having been in some really hard moments as a company, both like with the economy and kind of the greater piece of it. You know, am I going to be in business next year? Am I going to keep getting clients? But also dealing with really, really hard clients or really, really hard contractors or vendors that literally just won't ship the product or whatever it is. You know, you see hurdles every day in this business. And so, man, you just, it's going to be okay. You know, I'm here. I've made it this far. I'm keeping the lights on. We're going to be okay.
You know, as your firm has evolved, how has your role evolved?
I think having the majority of design within the for our client design is something that I just love. I just don't want to move too far away from that because that's sort of like the anchor for me. Mm-hmm. That's why I started it. That's why I'm here. I just always want to be pretty heavy-handed with my clients. So that part of it for sure. But in terms of like the change and how my role has changed, I mean, thank goodness. I think I've just been able to pull further back from the daily operations and get more into the bigger picture of AMD. Yes, staying within my client work, which feels very sort of minutia at times. But then I kind of waffle back and forth between that and, okay, what next? Like, yeah, what next? And what are some fun things that we could be dreaming up with different collaborators?
What does leveling up to you mean today when you look at your firm?
I think client process is always something that I'm eager to improve on and to tinker with. Like, I believe so strongly in handholding and that this is a luxury business and that we need to treat every minute of this experience for our clients as if it is a luxury experience for them. So I think that personalized aspect of it is imperative for them to feel taken care of. And so in that way, you know, like they might not, I have clients that are really hands-off and don't need me to tell them every little thing that I'm thinking about or deciding. And I have other clients that do need to know a lot of that stuff. And understanding that about the client is a luxury. Understanding that I don't need to bog them down with an email on all those details is a luxury. How, though, do they get that information? And how do we present it to them in a way that's really efficient and still keeps them, you know, feeling like they're involved? So, oh my gosh, so much of it is just about that level of minutia with the client and like sort of egos and personalities and, you know, partnerships, dealing with spouses. It's a lot of a personality business, what we do.
What does success look like for you today?
I mean, it's such a cliche answer, but it's just balance. It's being able to take some time off, paying myself, paying my team, you know, running a profitable company ultimately is what I mean by that. Staying deeply entrenched in the creative and feeling pushed in that way is so important to me. I mean, that those three things are really success. If I can come into work and feel like I'm excited about what I'm designing and I am paying my team and I'm not worried about that and I'm going home to my family and, you know, I just, that's it. It's pretty simple. That's success.
That's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to keep up with the latest design industry news, check out new products, or browse job openings, head on over to businessofhome.com. And if you're enjoying Trade Tales, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts to help others discover the show. If you have a note for the show or a story of your own to share, I'd love to hear from you. And you can email me at tradetales@businessofhome.com. Trade Tales is produced by me, Caitlin Peterson, and Caroline Burke. This episode was edited by Caroline Burke and Michael Castaneda. Our theme music is by Kyle Scott Wilson. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you back here next week.